Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. My name is James Henderson. I'm director of the gas program at OIES, and I have two colleagues with me today, Simon Pirani, a senior research fellow, and Jack Sharples, a research fellow. And they have jointly authored a paper entitled European Gas Storage, Backhaul Helps Open the Ukrainian Safety Valve, which is very topical indeed, given the current state of European gas markets. So, Simon, let me turn to you first. Can you just give me a quick bit of background about the rationale for the paper, the motivation for writing it, and what the story is?
Yes, Jim. We started off with the fact that as we go into the injection season this year, European storages have record volumes of gas in them. That's because prices have been low. People expected a supply interruption in January, due to the dispute over transit between Russia and Ukraine, and that supply interruption didn't happen. So the gas that had been stored in expectation of that is still stored, and there was a mild winter. And then, of course, when we got to spring, came the coronavirus crisis, which depressed gas demand across Europe very sharply. So then the question arose, could what happened in the United States, in the southern states with oil, when a storage bottleneck sent prices negative in April, could that happen here in the European gas market? And the answer briefly is no, it couldn't. And part of the reason for that is that European companies now have increasingly have access to the very large Ukrainian storage facilities. These were built in Soviet times. They're right near the western border of Ukraine, and they were used to balance the very large flows of gas coming through Siberia, coming from Siberia through Ukraine to Europe in Soviet times when that trade started. And times have moved on. We've had market reform in Ukraine, and basically these are now increasingly available to gas traders in Europe. And there are measures that have been taken by the Ukrainian companies which have helped this, and which are encouraging those flows to come into Ukrainian storage. There's a discounted transportation tariff offered to get the gas from the border to the storage facilities. There's a so-called customs warehouse arrangement where basically the gas is brought into Ukraine and stored duty-free. And we're also seeing now virtual interconnection points being set up on Ukraine's western borders, which are all helping and easing this flow of gas.
Okay, thanks. And we'll get into the detail around some of that in a few minutes. But Jack, let me turn to you and give us a bit of background on where we are with European storage levels now and at what point you think things are going to get critical.
Yeah, sure. So as of the 20th of May, in Europe as a whole, that is the EU plus the UK, stocks were at 69% of capacity. So we have just over 71 BCM in storage and another 32 BCM of unused capacity remaining. Now, if injection rates in the summer of 2020 match those of the last 3 years, then storage will surpass 95% of capacity. That is effectively full around the 1st of August, and we will hit absolute tank tops by the middle of August.
And just for a bit of sort of context, compared to previous years, that stacks up how? What do we look like in 2019?
Okay, so this year we are way ahead of where we have been at this point in the year in previous years. Normally, storage gets to around 90% of capacity by sort of October time. So if we hit that in August, then that's going to be really quite exceptional. For 2019, by the end of August, we'd hit 92% of capacity, but 2019 was itself an exceptional year. So if 2020 proves to be even more of a sort of full storage scenario than 2019, then we're really going to see something quite spectacular.
Okay, and obviously we're seeing that reflected in low prices at the moment. So Ukraine is then available. I mean, what are the numbers? How much storage is available in Ukraine and how much is free for use by traders and others?
Yeah, sure. So Ukraine has 30 BCM of storage capacity. And as of the 20th of May, stocks were 17 BCM, leaving 13 BCM available to Ukrainian entities and foreign traders looking for somewhere to park their gas this summer.
Okay, so some space available, as Simon mentioned earlier. But Simon, coming back to you, practically, how does this going to work? You talked about a customs warehouse being set up. I presume that's, you know, been enabled by, as you mentioned, some of the reforms in the Ukrainian gas sector. Can you tell us something about how these new regulations are facilitating the use of Ukrainian storage in a little bit more detail?
Sure. So the customs warehouse was actually set up last year around this time. Naftogaz Ukraini, the holding company, got agreement from the government to offer European traders this service. They can store volumes in Ukraine for up to 3 years, net of taxes and customs duties. And as we went into the heating season in October 2019, there was already 4 billion cubic meters in this customs warehouse. So it had started to be used last year. Now, one of the big stories in the Ukrainian gas sector last year was unbundling. Transportation system was finally unbundled from Naftogaz. That's now in the Gas TSO of Ukraine. It's a separate company. And in January this year, the TSO launched a short-distance transportation service with these discounted tariffs to bring gas from the Ukrainian border to the storage facilities, or to bring it from, say, the Hungarian border to the Polish border. So we now have a whole system in place. Gas can be brought from Hungary, stored in Ukraine, and then moved out to Slovakia or Poland, for example, or other combinations. And with virtual reverse flow, it will increasingly be the case that the volumes of physical gas will not actually have to move. So we really have had some progress as a result of the market reforms.
Okay, that's very interesting. And I guess with that progress, more and more interest in the customs warehouse. Jack, can you give us any figures about how much it's being used at the moment?
Yeah, sure. So the latest figures that we have from the Ukrainian side say that on the 1st of May, 2.4 BCM was being held in the customs warehouse, in addition to 14 BCM of regular storage.
Okay, and it's being used, Simon, by basically foreign companies and domestic ones. You kind of mentioned traders, but I guess domestic companies as well.
Yes, so going back to that 4 BCM that was stored last year as we went into the heating season, that was about half and half in the customs warehouse, half non-residents, foreign traders, and half Ukrainian companies. And don't forget that Ukraine's imports have largely been demonopolized in recent years. So we had 14 BCM being imported into Ukraine across its western borders last year. About half of that was purchased by Naftogaz, but the other half was purchased by quite a range of other Ukrainian entities. And these, as well as foreign traders, are using this customs warehouse facility. One interesting question that's come into my mind is whether Gazprom might choose to start using this customs warehouse. It famously stopped using Ukrainian storage in 2006 in the course of all those long and quite bitter disputes over transit and supply of gas between Russia and Ukraine. It used an agent to store gas then up until 2009, but then declined to use Ukrainian storage at all after that. I think in reality, this would be a political decision, and I also don't think we should expect that very quickly, but it's something to bear in mind.
Okay, an interesting question. As I say, no indications yet, but something to watch. And just I guess to be clear on the numbers, with the 4 BCM you talked about in the customs warehouse, that was the last heating season, and then currently already we've got 2.4 BCM in the customs warehouse. So I guess we're kind of ahead of schedule again this year. Would that be right?
Yes, and the companies involved will be hoping to push that number up with these various marketing devices that we've talked about.
Indeed. Okay, well, obviously, a lot of this, Jack, just coming back to you, a lot of this depends on physical ability to flow gas. So what can you talk us through the entry capacity and how critical this issue is?
Yeah. So Simon made reference to Ukrainian imports from its three Western neighbours. So if we take those one at a time, the largest physical import capacity is from Slovakia. That's just under 40 million cubic metres per day. From Hungary, the physical import capacity is just under 20 million cubic metres per day. And from Poland, it fluctuates slightly between 4 and 6 million cubic metres per day, depending on the summer-winter sort of season. When we put those into annual terms, that means that the capacity from Slovakia is around 14 BCM per year, 7 BCM from Hungary, and around 2 BCM from Poland. So this does represent a slight bottleneck, given that we have 13 BCM of Ukrainian storage capacity available to be filled over the next 5 months until the start of the winter heating season. But actually, the physical import capacity during that period, even if used at its fullest, is only around 9.5 BCM, of which, of course, a proportion will be utilized to service ongoing domestic Ukrainian gas consumption. So actually, the amount of physical capacity to bring gas into Ukraine is even, for the purpose of storage injections, is even less than that 9.5, and therefore substantially below the amount of available storage capacity.
Okay, interesting. So there is a something of a physical constraint. But Simon, coming back to you, you talk about the physical flows being supplemented by backhaul or virtual reverse, as you call it, import capacity. Can you talk about how that works?
Right. So backhaul means that, let's say, for example, that I am the Ukrainian TSO and you are the Hungarian one. Typically, I have to deliver volumes to you, and that's volumes of Russian gas coming through to European customers. And if, as has been the case for the last 5 or 6 years, you have some volumes to deliver to me, gas that you're moving into Ukraine for European shippers, last year my volumes would have continued to physically move westwards and yours would have physically moved eastwards. Now one shipment can be offset against the other. This is an arrangement between TSOs rather than a swap between traders, but the effect is similar. One physical set of molecules is offset against the other.
Okay, interesting. And so then the next obvious question is, when did this start? And more importantly, what extra capacity can it offer?
So on the Hungarian border, the new system was put in place on the 1st of January. There's a virtual interconnection point there, which actually brings together the two physical interconnection points. There's still a constraint that the amount of gas that can be virtually reversed obviously can't be greater than that total flow of Russian gas that's going from east to west. And we've said in the paper that we think that'll be about 40 million cubic meters a day over the summer. Through that route. Ukraine-Poland, we've got a virtual interconnection point and an agreement covering 9 million cubic meters a day, which is more or less the sort of flows that we see there. And Ukraine-Slovakia is a different situation. That's where the great bulk of the east-to-west flows, the Russian gas going through to Europe, travels. But the virtual reverse agreement only covers 10 million cubic meters a day. Total, and said in BCM a year, 7 BCM a year between Poland and Slovakia, a virtual reverse, 10 BCM a year via Hungary, that's plenty, 17 BCM. The spare capacity in the storage is 10 or 12 BCM, so adequate capacity. And the big interconnection point on the Hungarian border, it seems to me, is giving the Hungarian TSO a competitive edge. In fact, we saw some flows going from Slovakia through Hungary to Ukraine last month. And the Slovakian TSO has responded by putting a discounted transportation service in place where it's offering a really good discount if you move your gas from Slovakia and back to Slovakia.
That's very interesting. So creating some competitive tension amongst the TSOs. That's fascinating. So Jack, we talked a lot of numbers here, both in daily flows and annual flows. Perhaps I could ask you to kind of bring the whole thing together for us and talk about how much in total extra leeway Ukrainian storage could offer the European gas market over the rest of 2020.
Yeah, sure. So as we've mentioned earlier, the total physical Ukrainian import capacity is around 23 BCM per year. to which, as Simon notes, we can add 17 BCM of backhaul capacity. So that's a total of around 40 BCM per year, which equates to around 3.5 BCM per month. Now, Ukraine's currently got 13 BCM of storage capacity available, so if that physical and backhaul capacity is used at its fullest, at about 3.5 BCM per month, and all of those imports were injected into storage, then the remaining storage would be filled in about 3.5 months, that is, by September. Now, for every day that that physical and backhaul capacity is not used at its fullest, then that time frame gets pushed back. So, for example, in the first 10 days of May, the total combined physical and backhaul imports were around 41 million cubic meters per day, which is the average of the equivalent of around 15 BCM a year, or just a third of the combined physical and backhaul import capacity. So actually, even though there is the capacity to bring the imports in, and there is the free and available storage capacity, what we're currently seeing is actually somewhat limited Ukrainian imports, and therefore limited storage injections. So actually, in the paper, we draw a more conservative estimate that somewhere between 5 and 6 BCM, or perhaps at an outside scenario, up to 10 BCM, could be imported and injected into Ukrainian storage by the start of the winter heating season, which effectively mirrors the estimates stated by the Ukrainian TSO, GTSOU, at the end of April. Of course, this will all depend on if or when European market participants start to view Ukrainian storage as commercially desirable in substantial volumes. Now, if they don't react until late July, when European storage is likely to be over 90% full and everybody's hitting the panic button, then the dash for Ukrainian storage will be limited to the 3 months of late summer. So in that case, although substantial volumes will be injected into Ukrainian storage, actually, Ukrainian storage capacity will not be fully utilized. We won't see Ukraine hitting tank tops.
Okay, that's really interesting. So it really does provide then a buffer ahead of the heating season in Europe, and there's not a risk of Ukrainian storage being filled. That's very, very interesting. So Simon, just to come back to you then, I guess a question is whether traders can realistically access all this storage, you know, whether Ukraine will need some of it itself, and, you know, the regulatory system that will allow them to access the storage. Sounds like it's all in place, but maybe you could give us a little bit more detail on that as well.
Yeah, I think it's quite simple, Jim. This is something very big and very Soviet in its time. It's 31 BCM. In recent years, we've had 16 or 17 BCM in storage before the winter. And so, as the Ukrainian companies are fond of saying at the moment, there's plenty of room for everybody.
And indeed, just to come back to some of the comments you made at the start of the piece, you know, the Ukrainians appear to be facilitating the use of the storage by offering discounts on transportation, etc. So there's a real desire, if you like, to from the Ukrainian side to see this used and to make it accessible.
Yeah, this idea of using this storage has been talked about in Ukraine. I mean, at least since the change of government in 2014, a new management came to Naftogaz and they started saying, look, this is a great asset. And I remember thinking at the time that they were going to struggle to get business storing European gas because there was other storage available, transporting it, and all the regulatory problems people would have constrain the demand for this storage. But times have moved on, and of course what's changed is the balance of the European market, which is greatly oversupplied. So that and market reforms and coronavirus, I think, have combined to produce the situation we're now in, where there's more demand for this storage.
Excellent. Okay, and I guess, Jack, the final question for you would be, what are the key indicators that we're going to be following over the next 3-4 months to allow us to tell if Ukrainian storage is being used to any great extent, and, you know, what the levels are?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, the key data obviously will be the daily data on Ukrainian storage injections. And specifically there, what we're looking for is a ramp up of daily storage injections relative to what we've seen throughout May so far. That's something that we expect will take place in July through into August as European storage gets fuller and people start to make greater use of Ukrainian storage. Now, obviously, that will be complemented by the daily data that we will be monitoring on physical imports into Ukraine at the three border points that we've discussed earlier, but also the regular press releases by the Ukrainian TSO on how much backhaul that they're importing, because obviously that doesn't show up on the import data that we have. So there again, we're also going to be looking at a ramp up of Ukrainian storage, particularly during late summer as European storage gets full. We're going to hopefully see increased Ukrainian imports across the borders there, which will then pretty much run in parallel with the data that we have on storage injections.
Great, okay, thanks. Simon, then, last question for you, I think, as we wrap up this this podcast. I mean, from all we've said so far and from your very interesting paper, it looks like, the availability of storage and the progress in gas sector reforms in Ukraine can really start to help the integration of the Ukrainian and European markets in a way that we haven't seen in the past. What do you think the implications of that are? And do you think there's any risk of any backlash from Russia as a result?
Thanks, Jim. I think in terms of Ukraine drawing closer to Europe in both market and political terms, I think the backlash from Russia came in 2014 with the action in Crimea. With the support for the separatist forces in the east. I think that's now happened. That itself is now really passing into history, if you like. And the deal on gas transit between Gazprom and Naftogaz at the new year actually took a significant step away from those conditions. It drew a line under a lot of disputes, this huge arbitration case between these companies and all the other problems, and created a framework for future cooperation on a business level, despite the fact that these countries politically don't get on in the way that they did prior to 2014. So I think that's where we are with the political context. And I think, yes, we are now seeing the integration of Ukraine into the European market, which has been talked about incessantly since 2014 by everybody in Ukraine at both political and business level. In gas terms, that is now starting to happen. So we have rules that are basically aligned to those in the EU. We have the 14 BCM of imports. It's coming in with a range of importers, as I mentioned before. We have European companies actually setting up trading subsidiaries in the Ukrainian market itself, where most of the industrial customers are actually supplied by those traders, not by Naftogaz. And now we have this storage deal, which is another step towards that integration. And I think it will continue.
Okay, well, that's a great way of wrapping up what is a fascinating and important, I think, new development in the European gas market. So thanks, Simon. Thanks, Jack, for your detailed answers to the questions. Thanks also for the paper, which is available, as all our papers are, at www.oxfordenergy.org. So please go there to see this paper, to see our written research, and also to see our other podcasts and output, which is always available on our website. So without further ado, thanks to you for listening. Look out for future podcasts and stay healthy and goodbye.